All right, continuing with the story of the drug smuggling link. I'm going to read an article now from our edition of it, published in the San Francisco Examiner of Tuesday, April 21st of this year. The article is headed, "Sources Tell of CIA's Contra Drug Smuggler Link." The article is by Vincent Bielski and Dennis Bernstein, a special to the Examiner. Dateline Miami. In exchange for their help in arming the Contras, CIA operatives helped a network of Miami-based drug smugglers move their illicit cargo into the United States, a range of sources here and in Central America said. The sources, more than a dozen, include congressional investigators, convicted drug traffickers, and others in Costa Rica, Miami, and Washington. The agency turned to smugglers to fly weapons to the Contras in 1984 after Congress banned official U.S. aid to the Nicaraguan rebels, said one investigator for a Senate Foreign Relations Committee subcommittee looking into the use of cocaine to fund the Contra War. The relationship between the CIA and the smugglers lasted about 2 years and resulted in, quote, thousands of pounds of cocaine reaching U.S. cities, he said. Quote, "It was a marriage of convenience," he said. "The agency used smugglers to do what it couldn't legally do," unquote. In return, the investigator said, CIA operatives allowed the drug smugglers to use hidden airstrips in northern Costa Rica and gave them intelligence information to avoid the surveillance of U.S. drug enforcement authorities. Skipping down. The drug traffickers, who accused the CIA of conspiring with them, have been convicted on drug charges unrelated to their alleged CIA activities. They are serving time in a federal prison in Miami. They are expected to testify before a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee next month. George Morales, considered one of the convicted cocaine traffickers, is considered a, quote, kingpin smuggler by Florida standards, perhaps one of the five biggest, unquote, the investigators said. Morales, a Colombian national, also was a prominent figure among Latin American politicians who knew him as, quote, a major contributor to their political campaigns, the source said. Quote, Morales has paid off presidents and politicians from Mexico to Panama, the investigator said. His practice is to give them, say, $50,000 for their campaigns. He has that kind of money to throw around, unquote. In 1984, Morales saw Contras based in Costa Rica, quote, as a growing political force in Central America, and added them to his list of recipients of political handouts, the source said. Morales began his relationship with Contra leaders in Costa Rica with an arrangement for $250,000 in quarterly payments, the investigator said. When CIA operatives in Costa Rica learned of the arrangement, they formalized and expanded Morales' relationship with the Contras. In a prison interview, Morales said that after he had been indicted in 1984 for drug running, the CIA used the indictment to pressure him into cooperating. Quote, "It became a very straightforward relationship," the investigator said. The agency said to Morales, "You take care of our Contras and we'll take care of you." Morales said that under his agreement with the agency, he had established an air force to ferry arms to the Contras. Quote, "I was supplying aircraft and pilots and other financial support," Morales said. "We were flying weapons from Florida to Ilopango, a military base in El Salvador, and then to Costa Rica." Morales said his pilots had made many such trips in 1984 and 1985. He also said he had given a Cessna Titan plane to Costa Rican-based Contra leader Adolfo Chamorro in 1985. Federal Aviation's records show that Chamorro tried to register the plane in the United States in May 85. His request was turned down because the company under which he tried to register the plane is based in Costa Rica. According to the investigator, there were, quote, dozens of transactions between Morales and the Contras. In return, CIA operatives helped Morales smuggle, quote, thousands of pounds of cocaine into the United States through Costa Rica, the source said. Quote, Morales was successful in his scheme. He exploited the CIA connection to its fullest. The source described Morales as being on a first-name basis with the operatives. Quote, Morales let it be known that he needed what he needed in terms of intelligence to avoid getting caught, and it would appear, the source said. Morales received assurance that his phones wouldn't be tapped. He also was told about the weakness in the Drug Enforcement Administration's surveillance network, the source said. Morales said his planes had traveled from Colombia to northern Costa Rica, where they landed on airstrips owned or operated by John Hull, a rancher who owns 8,000 acres of land in Costa Rica and has been identified as a CIA operative. These airstrips also served other Contra arms shipments, said sources who participated in them. Contra mercenary Peter Glibbery said in an interview that he had seen the arrival of a large weapons shipment, which other investigators have linked to Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, at a Hull-owned airstrip in 1985. In an interview from Costa Rica, Hull denied any involvement with drug trafficking. Quote, "The drug traffickers are felons and shouldn't be believed," unquote. Hull said he did control 5 airstrips in Costa Rica, but in an area far from the western side of the country, where he said drug traffickers landed their planes. DEA agent Billy Yout said Morales' story of CIA and Contra links was, quote, "staged" to get a reduction in his prison sentence. Up until the time that the Oliver North story broke, Morales never once mentioned gun running to the Contras or the CIA, Yout said. Jack Bloom, a Senate Foreign Relations Committee staff member who was heading the investigation, said Morales, quote, "would almost certainly testify before the committee." Convicted drug smuggler Gary Betzner, one of Morales' favorite drug pilots, said in another interview that he had twice flown weapons to Hull's airstrips in 1984. He said he had returned to Florida with 500 kilograms of cocaine on each trip. Betzner, a crop duster from Arkansas and self-described, quote, "hippie," said Morales had asked him to make the flights in July 1984. He said Morales had escorted him to a plane loaded with weapons at the airport in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where they were met by two men Betzner identified as, quote, "government agents," unquote. "We exchanged hellos, then I boarded the aircraft and left," Betzner said. "It was about 11:30 at night. When I arrived the next morning in Costa Rica, John Hull and other people were there to offload the weapons," unquote. He hurriedly refueled his plane, loaded 500 kilograms of cocaine, packed in several green bags, and returned to Lakeland, Florida, he said. For his work, he was allowed to keep thousands of dollars worth of cocaine, he said. Convicted drug pilot Michael Tolliver says he also was part of a guns and drugs smuggling scheme set up by a man he believed was Max Gomez, according to a deposition given by Tolliver in a federal civil suit concerning Contra drug smuggling in Miami. Gomez, a key figure in the Contra arms network, met with Vice President Bush 3 times in 1985 and 1986. A former CIA operative, Gomez also is a longtime associate of Donald Gregg, Bush's national security aide. Gomez is reportedly an alias for Felix Rodriguez. In the deposition, Tolliver said Gomez had paid him about $75,000 to fly, quote, 28,500 pounds of military supplies to the Contra CIA-built camp in Aguacate, Honduras, in March 1986. Quote, "as an added bonus," Tolliver said, "he could smuggle his own drug shipment into the United States, quote, without ever having to worry about interception or arrest." So what we have here is a group of men, all of them in jail for drug smuggling, with a very detailed statements to make about how, in fact, their particular operation was set up. One of the most significant, of course, for our purposes, we talked about Betzner before, one of the most significant for our purposes in this case is Michael Tolliver, and the story specifically referring to Max Gomez, and of course Max Gomez connected to Donald Gregg. Gregg, of course, heavily connected to George Bush. We've talked about George Bush and the drug task force based out of Miami that he was heading up a couple of years ago, and our very strong suspicions that the reason George is keeping so very silent about the Iran-Contragate affair so far is because if he opens his mouth, he's going to stick his foot so far into it. Well, we'll just leave that thought in speculation. But anyway, that George himself is probably up to his pearly lobed ears in the drug smuggling end of the Iran-Contra operation. Okay, we're going to continue now for just a few more minutes before we take a break. We've got one last article that we want to read to kind of put the knot on this part of the broadcast.
Now, recall that in the proposed blowing up of the Moscow embassy, Mr. Garcia, Jesus Garcia, who was involved with Mr. Coutin from whose gunshot the Barry Seal murder weapon came, was told that this whole operation was George Bush's baby. Max Gomez, a.k.a. Felix Rodriguez, very close to George Bush, and we're going to deal more with Felix Rodriguez later in this and other broadcasts. However, The significance here is, of course, the major point to remember are the possible connections to George Bush. More on Tolliver's operations came from the San Jose Mercury News of Monday, April 6th of 1987. This is a Newsday story, Dateline Washington headline, Pilot Says He Flew Arms to Contras, Marijuana to U.S. A pilot who claims to have flown arms for the American-backed Nicaraguan rebels in Honduras said that on a return trip last year, he landed more than 12 tons of marijuana at Homestead Air Force Base near Miami. He said he followed an escort truck to an apron where he parked the aircraft and its cargo, was driven by base personnel to a taxi, and had an uneventful ride into town. In a statement to be delivered this week to Lawrence Walsh, the independent counsel investigating the Iran-Contra affair, the pilot, Michael Tolliver, said he landed a DC-6 containing 25,000 pounds of pot, unquote, at the Air Force Base in mid-March 1986. Tolliver is now serving a federal sentence on unrelated drug charges. Skipping down on the story, in his statement, a copy of which has been obtained by Newsday, Tolliver said that a few days earlier he had flown the plane from Miami International Airport with 28,500 pounds of military supplies to Aguacate, a Contra air base in Honduras. He said he was paid for the trip to Aguacate by a man he believes is Max Gomez, a retired CIA operative who reportedly helped coordinate arms shipments to the Contras. Gomez is a longtime associate of Donald Gregg, Vice President George Bush's national security aide. Tolliver's reported activities in shipping arms occurred during a congressional ban on U.S. government involvement in such activity. I would also point out that, of course, there is, has always been, at least ostensibly, a U.S. government ban on smuggling narcotics. And remember here, though, the Contra supply effort, its relationship to cocaine smuggling, and George Bush's efforts in this, quote, baby, unquote. We're going to come back to that. And, of course, as we indicated at the top of the broadcast, bear in mind Radio Free America shows 24 through 28, where we not only detail the intelligence services' involvement in narcotics smuggling, but the inextricable relationship between the international drug trade, the international arms traffic, and terror. In particular, Radio Free America shows 25, 6, and 7. Because that's where we're going to be coming, but that's what we'll be coming back to, among other things, when we return for the next segment of Radio Free America.
And that's exactly what we will be doing, is coming back. So don't go away. We got lots more. First, we're going to take a break and play a little music, give everybody a chance, including ourselves, to get up and separate those nearly fused spinal discs. So Dave Emery and myself, Nip Tuck, will return with more of Radio Free America in just a couple of minutes, right here on KFJC in Los Altos Hills. And thus we return, Nip Tuck and Dave Emery in the studios at KFJC on this Sunday evening with Radio Free America number 29, the first of our three-part series on Iran-Contragate. Tonight, focusing especially on the issue of drugs and drug smuggling and the use of drug smuggling to fund the Contra operations and other U.S. covert operations, as Dave mentioned at the outset of the broadcast. That we are basically breaking this down into three parts. The first being the drug connection, springing quite directly, also as Dave mentioned, out of our last five episodes of Radio Free America, 24 through 28 inclusive, on intelligence and narcotics. And that's going to be this episode tonight, and then next week we're going to focus on the terror connection. And then the third one coming up, number 31, is going to be focusing on the cover-up, and especially the cover-up of these two most important factors. So far this evening, we've been talking about the drug network, the intimations of the drug network, so closely allied with the Contra supply network, and of the rather interesting fate, at least so far, of a few of the people who have tried to tell their side of the story. Several of them are in jail. A few others are dead. We've talked about one. What was the term we coined last time? A KDP, a key dead player. One of our key dead players, a man by the name of Adler Berry, or Berry Adler Seal, last name Seal, who was a U.S. drug informer, turned sting operant, and supposedly had put together a sting to reveal the Sandinista government being involved in the drug network. As the that story began to fall apart, despite the Reagan administration's rigorous flogging of it to the U.S. media, Adler Berry Seal, who was also an informant against the Colombian cocaine overlords who themselves are tied in through the Medellin cartel into the Contra supply operation. Adler Berry Seal's police protection was suddenly jerked, and very soon after that, Adler himself shuffled off the mortal coil.
The people involved in the Adler Berry Seal alleged Sandinista sting appear to have many more close ties to the Contras than the Sandinistas. The cousin of Federico Vaughn turned out to be a key Contra supporter and banker. In turn, this milieu intersects very closely with, as we said, cocaine smuggling and, in turn, the U.S. intelligence apparat. Now, one of the key names to remember here is George Bush, the fellow whose baby, quote-unquote, this whole operation was said to be. Bush's connections, in turn, to Max Gomez, a.k.a. Felix Rodriguez, through Donald Gregg. Several of the alleged Contra arms and drug smugglers, Messrs. Morales, Betzner, and Tolliver, claim to have been involved with, among others, Max Gomez, a.k.a. Felix Rodriguez, in this Contra supply operation. Now, remember in particular the George Morales connection, and remember that in addition to running cocaine, George Morales was a championship speedboat racer, because the world of speedboat racing and of drug smuggling, and in turn, the U.S. intelligence apparat and Contra supply operation are going to intersect in some stories we're about to cover. And we're going to take a look at another death, which many people compared to the murder of Barry Adler Seal.
Yes, drug smuggling, speedboats, and George Bush, another important component in this particular strange web of intrigue. We're going to read an article from the New York Times for Thursday, February 12th, 1987. We're only into the second hour, and already the slurring is beginning. This is not a good sign. We're going to read an article from the New York Times for Thursday, February 12th of this year. An article headlined, "Prisoners Say U.S. Condoned Smuggling of Drugs." The article is by George Volsky, as a special to the New York Times, datelined Miami. "People indicted on drug charges are increasingly arguing as a defense that they have been supplying arms to the Nicaraguan rebels with the knowledge of federal agents, according to law enforcement officers. Such allegations represent a serious obstacle to anti-narcotics work, according to the top federal prosecutor here and other officers. For several months, prisoners have been asserting that when they were caught, they were helping the Nicaraguan counter-revolutionaries. These statements come on the heels of reports last fall that federal investigators had evidence that Americans ferrying arms to the Contras were smuggling cocaine and other drugs on their return trips to the United States. Some federal and state prosecutors are also concerned that such assertions may evoke sympathy among Cuban Americans on juries here, because some members of the large Cuban community here believe that helping the Contras militarily is worthwhile, regardless of the method." Quote, "These allegations happen here and in other places on a regular basis," said Leon B. Kellner, the United States attorney here. "It is very frustrating. It's a very frustrating thing because the work I have been trying to do in the area of narcotics is being impaired," unquote. He said his investigations took much longer while he sought to dispel any notion that the defendant's actions were assisted by government agents. Mr. Kellner said that more than 50% of 2,700 defendants his office handled last year were involved in drug cases. One trial at which such a defense was to be attempted was that of George Morales. From his jail cell, he said that the profit from the operations that brought his arrest had been used to aid the Nicaraguan rebels, and that federal agents knew this. Mr. Morales' trial, for which his attorney had subpoenaed as witnesses Vice President Bush and Secretary of State George P. Shultz, did not begin as scheduled January 26th. Instead, Mr. Morales, a three-time winner of the Offshore Powerboat World Championship, pleaded guilty in West Palm Beach to drug and tax evasion charges. Well, before letting Dave focus on the main point of this story, and as it ties into our next story, I just thought it was rather interesting that Mr. Kellner said that Leon Kellner, the United States attorney in Miami, said investigations took much longer while he sought to dispel any notion that the defendant's actions were assisted by government agents. Well, seems to me that prosecutors know that the duty of a legal officer is not to dispel any notions of anything, but is to, in fact, find out the truth. And the allegations have been coming so fast and so thick and are so strongly substantiated by both circumstance and also by eyewitness reports that it seems one is going to have to work more than a little bit of overtime to dispel such notions that government agents might, in fact, be using drug smugglers prominently in the Contra supply network.
It's worth remembering also about Morales, not only that he subpoenaed George Bush and George Shultz to be witnesses at his trial, but remember also that he was scheduled to testify in front of a Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That was mentioned in an article Nip read you shortly before the break. In fact, the ninth article in our series, according to line items. We're going to come back to that Senate Foreign Relations Committee at the end of the broadcast this evening and some interesting things dealing with that. But for the time being, bear in mind above all the Bush link, the Adler-Barry seal sting, which appears to have gone in a rightward rather than leftward direction as far as the origin of the cocaine, the allegations of Betzner, Tolliver, and Morales about connections through Max Gomez to George Bush, and the connection of George Morales to the world of powerboat racing. Reading now from the San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, February 4th of 1987. It's an article by Patrick May and Reynaldo Ramos of the Knight Ridder News Service. It's Dateline Miami and headlined, Designer and Racer of Boats is Shot to Death in Miami. Offshore powerboat pioneer Don Aronow, A-R-O-N-O-W, a living legend of speed at sea, was murdered Tuesday on a North Dade County street lined with boat manufacturing companies he founded. Aronow, 59, who won two world powerboat racing championships and went on to breed and race horses, was hit by four or five bullets fired from a car that pulled up beside his. According to witnesses, both drivers stopped in the road facing opposite directions. Aronow rolled down his window, spoke a few words, and was shot. The other car made a U-turn and disappeared. The engine and air conditioning of Aronow's white Mercedes were still running when Bobby Moore, one of his longtime friends, reached him. He had rolled the window down on the driver's side, and apparently the guy opened fire on him at close range, Moore said. I could see that one of the bullets had gone through the car door. There was so much blood on him, it was hard to tell how many times he had been hit, but I could see he had been shot in the neck and jaw, unquote. The motive for the killing was not known. I'd been with him so long, I'd know if there were any problems, said Patty Lazaka, Aronow's secretary and office manager for 15 years. She notified Aronow's wife, Lillian, who was at Mount Sinai Medical Center when he died there about 4:45 p.m., about 15 minutes after the Metro Dade Air Rescue helicopter brought him. During a 25-year career as a designer, builder, and racer of powerboats, Aronow founded the Formula, Donzi, Magnum, Cigarette, and Squadron 12 boat companies. Aronow, who lived on Miami Beach, is best known for the Rakish Cigarette, a dip-nosed speed craft he designed for racing. Its name has become the generic term for the boats most favored by smugglers racing loads of marijuana and cocaine ashore from freighters in the Gulf Stream. Aronow, who lived at a speed comparable to that of his boats, enjoyed the association. He made up for it by designing and building an even faster boat, nicknamed Blue Thunder, for the U.S. Customs Service. Once, he gave Vice President George Bush a hair-raising ride on Blue Thunder. The Bush-Aronow connection worth bearing in mind here, because apparently Donald Aronow also loaned also provided speedboats to those people in charge with intercepting those very same smugglers using his cigarette boats, and there are questions about why Don Aronow may have been killed. Bear in mind the George Morales link to the world. He was a championship powerboat racer himself.
Continuing with the strange death of Mr. Aronow, an article from the New York Times for Thursday, February 5th, 1987, headlined Miami Death Likened to Drug Slaying. Another article by George Volsky is special to the Times, Dateline Miami. A federal official today described the killing Tuesday of Donald Aronow, a noted Miami boat builder and businessman, as a, quote, typical hit carried out by, quote, Colombian drug traffickers, unquote. The official, Billy Yout, a spokesman for the Miami Office of the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration, said that in 90% of the investigations of similar killings, Colombian drug dealers were found to be involved. Commander William P. Johnson, a spokesman for the Metro Dade County Police Department, which is in charge of the investigation, said, quote, Mr. Aronow was involved in many diverse activities here, and we are looking into all of them to find a possible motive, unquote. The 59-year-old Aronow was shot at 4 p.m. yesterday in the northeast section of Miami, where there are many boatyards and marinas. He was shot several times from a dark blue late-model Lincoln Town Car. The shots were directed at Mr. Aronow's white Mercedes-Benz Roadster. According to witnesses, the Lincoln was parked near an office of a friend whom Mr. Aronow visited. When he drove away, witnesses said, the dark car pulled alongside the Aronow auto, and after both stopped at an intersection, one or more occupants of the dark car fired at Aronow. The dark car sped away. because its windows were tinted, witnesses did not see how many people were inside. Late today, the police released a composite picture of the presumed assailant. The man was described as having, quote, tan complexion, as 30 to 40 years old, with several days' growth of beard. Parenthetically, maybe he was shot by Don Johnson. Mr. Yout of the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency said there was a similar murder last year in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in which a government informant, Barry Seal, was killed. Quote, but the similarity stops there, he said. I have checked our records, and we have nothing on Mr. Aronow there, unquote. Mr. Yout said that the agency was willing to assist the county police if asked. Skipping down, Mr. Aronow was best known for his design of a speedboat called the Cigarette, now notorious for its frequent use by drug smugglers to transfer drugs from motherships into the many unwatched spots on the South Florida coast. In the last several years, law agencies have also begun using speedboats of the Cigarette type, some of which can go 80 miles an hour. Since 1985, the Customs Service has bought 13 of the boats from Mr. Aronow. Aronow also became a friend of Vice President Bush, who owns a 28-foot cigarette built for him by the cigarette racing team of North Miami Beach. Anna T. Barnett, the executive assistant United States attorney in Miami, was quoted in the Miami News today as saying that Mr. Aronow had had, quote, a close working relationship with the Customs Service, unquote. She added, of course, he made a lot of money from his contacts, unquote, with the service.
So questions remain now about the circumstances, obviously, of Donald Aronow's murder and the connection to George Bush, Bush's involvement, apparent involvement with the Iran, the Contra supply network, and its involvement in turn with the drug trafficking are one of the things to consider. Again, obviously the final word is nowhere near in on the death of Donald Aronow, but one of the reasons that we're looking at, the reason that we're looking at it here is obviously against the background of people like George Morales, people like George Bush, and the Guns for Drugs operation, which appears to have financed an awful lot of the Contra supply effort. Reading now more along that same line of inquiry, the New York Times of Saturday, February 28th of 1987. This is a story by Peter Kerr, K-E-R-R, of the New York Times, Dateline Miami, headlined, Coastal Drug Running is Luring Adventurers. It may be Florida's most profitable and illegal sport. A 50-mile dash past high-speed government patrol boats, helicopters, and balloons to smuggle marijuana and cocaine to the American shore. This is the entryway, the highway, David H. Dean, the 52-year-old captain of a high-powered Customs Service catamaran, said as he stared across flat, glistening seas in the direction of Bimini, 45 miles away. Behind him was the Miami skyline, a finish line in pink and white. The money and the risks have lured an increasing number of adventurers into the contest, some of them prominent figures from the worlds of professional automobile and boat racing in the state. And some of the losers now face years in prison. Several well-known car and boat racers have been indicted in the last year, and more such indictments may be coming, law enforcement officials say. In addition, a major maker of speedboats recently admitted concealing the source of smugglers' cash, and this month, the most prominent designer of power racing boats, Don Aronow, was shot to death in what the police describe as a slaying characteristic of drug traffickers, although his death is still under investigation. Skipping down on the article. In January, a manufacturer of high-power speedboats, Midnight Express of Opa-locka, Florida, admitted being a conduit for drug traffickers to conceal the source of their money. As a penalty, the company agreed to make $500,000 worth of fast boats for the Drug Enforcement Administration. And last month, George Morales, who holds the record for the fastest speedboat run from New York to Miami, pleaded guilty to a charge of tax evasion and to charges that he smuggled marijuana, methaqualone, and 2,640 pounds of cocaine from Colombia through the Bahamas. Although no motive has been established, the murder of Mr. Aronow, 59 years old, who established five powerboat companies, has cast a shadow over an industry that has long produced a favored tool of drug smugglers. Mr. Aronow designed the high-speed catamaran used by the Customs Service and the cigarette boat, which has become a synonym for smuggler's craft. His corporate associates say he was not involved in the drug trade. Well, as we've seen, he was involved with George Bush, and it appears from the statements of many people, including Mr. Morales, who was convicted and was another intimate of the powerboat racing world, that drug smuggling was providing a lot of the Contras cash. And remember, of course, the Striking ambiguities about the Adler-Barry seal sting in which he went after the Sandinistas appears to have wound up with the Contras and the Medellin cartel and was then murdered shortly thereafter. And the evidentiary tributaries running from the Barry Adler seal murder go in turn to the Contra supply network and cocaine smuggling. So evaluate the death of Donald Aronow for what it may be worth. This is one of the speculative elements in the this first part of the Iran-Contra series. There'll be a couple of others. The reason we're taking a look at the death of Donald Aronow in connection with all of these events is that a lot of people who have provided information in various respects concerning the Iran-Contra scandal, and in particular the use of cocaine smuggling to provide capital for that operation, well, a lot of them have wound up in poor health.
Remember, we talked at the beginning of the broadcast about the fact that Dave and I, as well as others, feel that the great ticking time bomb as far as the Reagan administration is concerned in the Iran-Contragate case is, in fact, the drug use angle, and that it could conceivably blow the administration right out of the water.
One of the ticking bombs. I think the terrorist bomb, you know, no pun intended, could perhaps be even more devastating, but there isn't as yet as much information on that particular aspect. But,
yeah, well, we've also here in this country, we've gone through several years now of the semantic readjustment of the words terrorists and freedom fighters, to the point where some Americans have been convinced that, in fact, terrorists are freedom fighters, but no American has yet been convinced that drug dealers are anything other than drug dealers. So it's the most semantically clear-cut thing. Again, it also lends a little poignancy to the witnesses in the witnesses to the connection between the Reagan administration and drug smuggling dropping dead. Speaking of witnesses dropping dead, another witness of some prominence that we have discussed in the past was a man by the name of Stephen Paul Carr, last name spelled C-A-R-R. We're going to read a little bit about him right now from an article originally published Friday, December 19th, 1986, in the San Jose Mercury News, headlined Mystery Shrouds Death of Aspiring Mercenary. The article is by E.A. Torriero, Mercury News staff writer. And we're going to skip down partway into the article. The beginning just tells about how Stephen Carr happened to walk out of his house one morning and fall down dead in his driveway in his robe and underwear. Detectives in Los Angeles downplayed any suggestion that Carr might have met with foul play. Quote, "To me, it's a classic cocaine overdose case," said Los Angeles Police Detective Mel Arnold, who said he believes lab reports that are expected to be released today will support that conclusion. Quote, "He's a snitch, a thief, a habitual drug user, and a no-good whose lifestyle did him in," unquote. But the case is rife with unresolved questions. Who gave Carr the cocaine that he supposedly snorted? Why did Carr spend most of December 12th away from the townhouse? Where was he and who, if anyone, did he see that day? And why did he wake from sleeping, snort cocaine, and head for his sister's car at 3 a.m., what was he looking for in the car? Quote, "I simply don't know the answers to those questions," Arnold said. "All I know is that he is dead and that cocaine does a lot of strange things to the mind," unquote. Carr, a former carpenter with a yen for combat, may have been paranoid, but he also had some dangerous friends, and he had been uncommonly vocal about those friends' activities. In the past 2 years, Carr, who admitted having flown with a plane load of weapons in 1985 from South Florida to Costa Rica via an airbase in El Salvador, had told his story to everyone from CBS News to newspapers in Europe and the United States to congressional staffers. Perhaps more importantly, he had told it to lawyers who brought a $23 million federal civil lawsuit in Miami on behalf of two journalists who charged U.S. officials with mounting an illegal war against Nicaragua. Just say parenthetically, that's the Christic Institute suit filed on behalf of Tony Avergan and Martha Honey. We'll be talking about that more later in the broadcast. Carr's death, coming at the height of the Contra-Iran arms controversy, attracted national attention and sent reporters scurrying to ask such questions as, who had it in for Carr? Quote, "Mostly everybody," said Jerry Berry, his Florida attorney. Were Central American rebels breathing down his neck? Quote, "I always worried about that," Berry said. Did he know too much about who was really in charge of arms shipments to anti-government forces in Nicaragua? Quote, "He knew about the private suppliers from the small guys all the way up," Daniel Sheehan, the attorney in the federal lawsuit, told reporters in Washington on Sunday. Was Carr's death a CIA hit? Quote, "That's stupid," a CIA spokesman said, refusing further comment. Well, We can leave the CIA's response aside, because I don't think anybody ever is going to expect the CIA to admit anything in a public press conference anyway. But again, Stephen Carr, like Adler Barry Seale, and quite probably, or quite possibly, like Donald Aronow, a man who knew a great deal about the internal workings of the Contra-slash-cocaine-slash-Reagan administration connection. Stephen Carr, a man who wandered out into his driveway at 3 a.m. in the morning and keeled over dead, just like Adler Barry Seale had his police protection somewhat confusingly removed and was promptly shot dead, and Donald Aronow gunned down in front of a friend's house in Speedboat Row in Miami.
More about the death of Stephen Carr here and some of the information that he might have been able to provide had he lived longer. This from the San Francisco Examiner of Friday, December 19th of 1986. Another article by Vince Bielski, B-I-E-L-S-K-I, and Dennis Bernstein. It's headlined, Mysterious Death of Contra Insider. Subheaded, One-time Sandinista foe said U.S. hustled him out of Costa Rica. Stephen Carr, 27, died last Saturday from what the Los Angeles Police Department called a probable cocaine overdose, unquote. The coroner's office in Los Angeles has yet to announce the cause of Carr's death. After fighting with the Contras in early 1985 from a base in northern Costa Rica, Carr had become a key source of information to congressional investigators on the activities of Contra arms suppliers and their alleged involvement with cocaine trafficking to finance their operation. While in Costa Rica, Carr had received a subpoena to testify at a trial there in May of 1986. Carr said he was planning on testifying against John Hull, a U.S. citizen and landowner in northern Costa Rica who was suing two American reporters for libel. The reporters, Martha Honey and Tony Avrigan, Avrigan, by the way, is A-V-I-R-G-A-N, who were working for the British Broadcasting Company and ABC, had published a book in Costa Rica based on information provided by Carr and others. It said Hull was supporting the Contras militarily and was associated with the CIA. On May 16th, in a meeting at the U.S. Embassy in Costa Rica, Carr said that U.S. officials had threatened to put him in jail if he testified against Hull, and then forced him to return to the United States. Carr said Kirk Kotuba, K-O-T-U-B-A, the consul general, and John Jones, the acting chief of the consulate, were two of the officials who threatened him. After arriving in Miami, Carr recounted this episode to Honey and U.S. congressional aides. The aides said Carr had provided them with accurate information in the past about the activities of the arms network. Carr was jailed in Costa Rica in April of 1985 for violating the country's neutrality laws. While in jail, an embittered Carr began talking with the two journalists and became a source for their book. Skipping down on the article, after Carr's return to the U.S., congressional investigators said they had planned to bring him before Congress. I'm going to repeat that last sentence. After Carr's return to the U.S., congressional investigators said they had planned to bring him before Congress. His testimony, based on his participation in a March 6, 1985 arms shipment from Fort Lauderdale to Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador, would have linked Felix Rodriguez, the ex-CIA agent who met with Vice Presidential aide Donald Gregg about the arms supply network, to that weapons shipment, according to Dan Sheehan, an attorney with the Christic Institute, a public interest law firm in Washington. Quote, he was the guy that can prove that the March 6th shipment of weapons that flew out of the Fort Lauderdale airport went to Ilopango Airport, Sheehan said. He witnessed and could have identified Felix Rodriguez as the guy who offloaded the weapons to smaller planes, which were then flown to Hull's ranch in Costa Rica, unquote. In early 1986, Carr and two other witnesses told federal authorities that several major players in the arms supply network were involved in the shipment, including Tom Posey, head of the U.S. mercenary group Civilian Materiel Assistance, Robert Owen, reportedly a liaison to fired National Security Council aide Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, and Hull, Sheehan said. A grand jury in Miami recently began hearing evidence about the March 6th weapons shipment. According to Sheehan, Carr was the one person who could have provided the jury with an eyewitness account that the weapons had been transported from the U.S. soil to El Salvador, evidence essential to making a case that the U.S. Neutrality Act and the Arms Export Control Act had been violated. According to Jonathan Weiner, W-I-N-E-R, an aide to Senator John Kerry, Democrat of Massachusetts, quote, a great deal of the information Carr provided did check out. It will now be harder for anyone to bring a prosecution with Stephen's testimony now unavailable, and I think that is very unfortunate, unquote. Carr was also expected to be a witness in a federal lawsuit in Miami brought by the Christic Institute against 29 defendants allegedly involved in arms smuggling to the Contras and in drug trafficking, as well as a 1985 plot to assassinate the U.S. ambassador to Costa Rica. So bear in mind, Tom Posey, part of the network intersecting with Jesus Garcia and Mr. Coutin, and Coutin's arms shop, in addition to being a Contra gathering place or Contra support center, was also the place that provided the weapon to kill Barry Adler Seal. Recall also that the connection between Max Gomez, a.k.a. Felix Rodriguez, and the aforementioned George Morales, Tolliver, and Gary Betzner, and of course the connection between them to George Bush. Also the statement that this whole thing is George Bush's baby.
Looking a little further into the death of Stephen Carr, this is an article from the Miami Herald for Friday, December 19th, 1986. There's a reference in this, I think, to Naples, I believe. Well, that maybe it's in the part we're not going to read anyway. It's Naples, Florida that they're referring to, not Naples, Italy. The article is headlined, "Mercenary Was Afraid He Would Be Killed." Oh, there it is right in the headline. "Naples Attorney Says." But since it's a Miami paper, that they don't mention. That's Naples, Florida. The article is by Lori Rosa of the Herald. And the article goes as follows. "The Naples attorney for Stephen Carr, a self-described mercenary who fought briefly with the Nicaraguan Contras, said Thursday that Carr told him he feared he would be killed because of disclosures he made about illegal activities in the Contra movement. Quote, Stephen had reasons and motivations to be fearful, Jerry Berry said. There were motives for foul play. Skipping down. In an August 18th letter made public Thursday, Senator John Kerry, Democrat of Massachusetts, told Collier Circuit Judge Hugh Hayes that Carr should be released from jail early so he could testify in Washington. He was in Collier County Jail at that time on a probation violation. Quote, information has been supplied, Kerry's letter stated, information has been supplied to my office indicating that millions of dollars in military aid to the Contras has been diverted to private individuals and that persons associated with the Contra movement may have been involved in drug trafficking. Unquote, Kerry wrote. Hayes refused to release Carr early.
So bear in mind the fear that Carr had that he would be assassinated. Whether or not he was in fact assassinated or died from the apparent cocaine overdose, you can decide for yourself. However, listen very closely to the following before making your decision.